2. The Universal Round. As the consciousness of the individual rests on a sea of night into which it descends in slumber and out of which it mysteriously wakes, so in the imagery of myth, the universe is precipitated out of and reposes upon a timelessness back into which it again dissolves. And as the mental and physical health of the individual depends on an orderly flow of vital forces into the field of waking day from the unconscious dark, so again in myth, the continuance of the cosmic order is assured only by a controlled flow of power from the source. The gods are symbolic personifications of the laws governing this flow. The gods come into existence with the dawn of the world and dissolve with the twilight. They are not eternal in the sense that the night is eternal. Only from the shorter span of human existence does the round of a cosmogonic eon seem to endure. The cosmogonic cycle is normally represented as repeating itself, world without end. During each great round, lesser dissolutions are commonly included, as the cycle of sleep and waking revolves throughout a lifetime. According to an Aztec version, each of the four elements, water, earth, air, and fire, terminates a period of the world. The eon of the waters ended in deluge, that of the earth with an earthquake, that of air with a wind, and the present eon will be destroyed by flame. According to the Stoic doctrine of the cyclic conflagration, all souls are resolved into the world soul, or primal fire. When this universal dissolution is concluded, the formation of a new universe begins. Cicero's Renovatio, and all things repeat themselves, every divinity, every person, playing again his former part. Seneca gave a description of this destruction in his De Consolatione ad Marcium, and appears to have looked forward to living again in the cycle to come. A magnificent vision of the cosmogonic round is presented in the mythology of the Jains. The most recent prophet and savior of this very ancient Indian sect was Mahavira, a contemporary of the Buddha, 6th century BC. His parents were already followers of a much earlier Jaina savior prophet, Parshvanatha, who is represented with snakes springing from his shoulders and is reputed to have flourished 872 to 772 BC. Centuries before Parshvanatha, there lived and died the Jaina savior Nemenatha, declared to have been a cousin of the beloved Hindu incarnation Krishna. And before him, again, were exactly 21 others, going all the way back to Rishabhanatha, who existed in an earlier age of the world, when men and women were always born in wedded couples, were 2 miles tall, and lived for a period of countless years. Rishabhanatha instructed the people in the 72 sciences, writing, arithmetic, reading of omens, etc., the 64 accomplishments of women, cooking, sewing, etc., and the 100 arts, pottery, weaving, painting, smithing, barbering, etc. Also, he introduced them to politics and established a kingdom. Before his day, such innovations would have been superfluous, for the people of the preceding period, who were 4 miles tall, with 128 ribs, enjoying a lifespan of 2 periods of countless years, were supplied in all their needs by 10 wish-fulfilling trees, kalpavrshka, which gave sweet fruits, leaves that were shaped like pots and pans, leaves that sweetly sang, leaves that gave forth light at night, flowers delightful to see and to smell, food perfect both to sight and to taste, leaves that might serve as jewelry, and bark providing beautiful clothes. One of the trees was like a many-storied palace in which to live. Another shed a gentle radiance like that of many little lamps. The earth was sweet as sugar, the ocean as delicious as wine. And then again, before this happy age, there had been a period happier still, precisely twice as happy, when men and women had been 8 miles tall, possessing each 256 ribs. When those superlative people died, they passed directly to the world of the gods, without ever having heard of religion, for their natural virtue was as perfect as their beauty. The Jains conceive of time as an endless round. Time is pictured as a wheel with 12 spokes or ages, classified in 2 sets of 6. The first set is called the descending series, Avasarpani, and begins with the age of the superlative giant couples. That paradisiac period endures for 10 millions of 10 millions of 100 millions of 100 million periods of countless years, and then yields slowly to the only half as blissful period, when men and women are only 4 miles tall. In the third period, that of Rushabhanatha, first of the 24 world saviors, happiness is mixed with a little sorrow, and virtue with a little vice. At the conclusion of this period, men and women are no longer born together in couples to live together as man and wife. During the fourth period, the gradual deterioration of the world and its inhabitants steadily continues. The lifespan and stature of man slowly diminish. 23 world saviors are born, each restating the eternal doctrine of the Jains in terms appropriate to the conditions of his time. 3 years, 8 1/2 months after the death of the last of the saviors and prophets, Mahavira, this period comes to an end. Our own age, the fifth of the descending series, began in 522 BC and will last for 21,000 years. No Jaina savior will be born during this time, and the eternal religion of the Jains will gradually disappear. It is a period of unmitigated and gradually intensifying evil. The tallest human beings are only 7 cubits tall, and the longest lifespan no more than 125 years. People have only 16 ribs. They are selfish, unjust, violent, lustful, proud, and avaricious. But in the sixth of the descending ages, the state of man and his world will be still more horrible. The longest life will be only 20 years. 1 cubit will be the greatest stature, and 8 ribs the meager allotment. The days will be hot, the nights cold. Disease will be rampant, and chastity non-existent. Tempests will sweep over the earth, and toward the conclusion of the period, these will increase. In the end, all life, human and animal, and all the vegetable seeds will be forced to seek shelter in the Ganges, in miserable caves, and in the sea. The descending series will terminate, and the ascending series, Utsarpini, begin, when the tempest and desolation will have reached the point of the unendurable. For 7 days, then, it will rain, and 7 different kinds of rain will fall. The soil will be refreshed, and the seeds will begin to grow. Out of their caves, the horrible dwarf creatures of the arid, bitter earth will venture, and very, very gradually, there will be perceptible a slight improvement in their morals, health, beauty, and stature, until presently, they will be living in a world such as the one we know today. And then a savior will be born, named Padmanatha, to announce again the eternal religion of the Jains. The stature of mankind will approach again the superlative, the beauty of man will surpass the splendor of the sun. At last, The earth will sweeten and the waters turn to wine. The wish-fulfilling trees will yield their bounty of delights to a blissful population of perfectly wedded twins. And the happiness of this community again will be doubled, and the wheel, through 10 millions of 10 millions of 100 millions of 100 million periods of countless years, will approach the point of beginning the downward revolution, which again will lead to the extinction of the eternal religion and the gradually increasing noise of unwholesome merrymaking, warfare, and pestilential winds. This ever-revolving, 12-spoked wheel of time of the Jains is a counterpart of the cycle of 4 ages of the Hindus, the first age a long period of perfect bliss, beauty, and perfection, lasting 4,800 divine years, the second of somewhat lesser virtue, lasting 3,600 divine years, the third of equally intermingled virtue and vice, lasting 2,400 divine years, and the last, our own, of steadily increasing evil, lasting 1,200 divine years, or 432,000 years according to human calculation. A divine year is equal to 360 human years. But at the termination of the present period, instead of beginning again, immediately to improve, as in the cycle described by the Jains, all is first to be annihilated in a cataclysm of fire and flood, and thereby reduced to the primordial state of the original, timeless ocean, to remain for a period equal to that of the whole length of the 4 ages. The world's great ages then begin anew. Whether the myth was originally an illustration of the philosophical formula, or the latter a distillation out of the myth, it is today impossible to say. Certainly, the myth goes back to remote ages, but so too does philosophy. Who was to know what thoughts lay in the minds of the old sages who developed and treasured the myth and handed it on? Very often, during the analysis and penetration of the secrets of archaic symbol, one can only feel that our generally accepted notion of the history of philosophy is founded on a completely false assumption, namely that abstract and metaphysical thought begins where it first appears in our extant records. The philosophical formula illustrated by the cosmogonic cycle is that of the circulation of consciousness through the 3 planes of being. The first plane is that of waking experience, cognitive of the hard, gross facts of an outer universe, illuminated by the light of the sun and common to all. The second plane is that of dream experience, cognitive of the fluid, subtle forms of a private interior world, self-luminous and of one substance with the dreamer. The third plane is that of deep sleep, dreamless, profoundly blissful. In the first are encountered the instructive experiences of life. In the second, these are digested, assimilated to the inner forces of the dreamer. While in the third, all is enjoyed and known unconsciously in the space within the heart, the room of the inner controller, the source and end of all. The cosmogonic cycle is to be understood as the passage of universal consciousness from the deep sleep zone of the unmanifest through dream to the full day of waking, then back again through dream to the timeless dark. As in the actual experience of every living being, so in the grandiose figure of the living cosmos, in the abyss of sleep, the energies are refreshed. In the work of the day, they are exhausted. The life of the universe runs down and must be renewed. The cosmogonic cycle pulses forth into manifestation and back into non-manifestation amidst the silence of the unknown. The Hindus represent this mystery in the holy syllable Aum, spelled A-U-M. Here the sound ah represents waking consciousness, oo, dream consciousness, deep sleep. The silence surrounding the syllable is the unknown. It is called simply the fourth. Since in Sanskrit, A and U coalesce in O, the sacred syllable is pronounced and often written OM, spelled O-M. The syllable itself is God as creator, preserver, destroyer, but the silence is God eternal, absolutely uninvolved in all the opening and closings of the round.
It is unseen, unrelated, inconceivable, uninferable, unimaginable, indescribable. It is the essence of the one self-cognition common to all states of consciousness. All phenomena cease in it. It is peace. It is bliss. It is non-duality.
Myth remains necessarily within the cycle, but represents this cycle as surrounded and permeated by the silence. Myth is the revelation of a plenum of silence within and around every atom of existence. Myth is a directing of the mind and heart by means of profoundly informed figurations to that ultimate mystery which fills and surrounds all existences. Even in the most comical and apparently frivolous of its moments, mythology is directing the mind to this unmanifest which is just beyond the eye. The aged of the aged, the unknown of the unknown, has a form and yet has no form, we read in a Kabbalistic text of the medieval Hebrews. He has a form whereby the universe is preserved, and yet has no form, because he cannot be comprehended. This aged of the aged is represented as a face in profile, always in profile, because the hidden side can never be known. This is called the great face. Makroprosopos, from the strands of its white beard, the entire world proceeds.
That beard, the truth of all truths, proceedeth from the place of the ears, and descendeth around the mouth of the Holy One, and descendeth and ascendeth, covering the cheeks which are called the places of copious fragrance. It is white with ornament, and it descendeth in the equilibrium of balanced power, and furnisheth a covering even unto the midst of the breast. That is the beard of adornment, true and perfect, from which flow down 13 fountains, scattering the most precious balm of splendor. This is disposed in 13 forms, and certain dispositions are found in the universe, according to those 13 dispositions which depend from that venerable beard, and they are opened out into the 13 gates of mercies.
The white beard of Makroprosopos descends over another head, the little face, Microprosopos, represented full face and with a beard of black. And whereas the eye of the great face is without lid and never shuts, the eyes of the little face open and close in a slow rhythm of universal destiny. This is the opening and closing of the cosmogonic round. The little face is named God. The great face, I am.
The text in which we learn of the Makroprosopos and the Microprosopos, the Zohar, light, splendor, is a collection of esoteric Hebrew writing given to the world about 1305 by a learned Spanish Jew, Moses de Leon. It was claimed that the material had been drawn from secret originals, going back to the teachings of Simeon ben Yochai, a rabbi of Galilee in the 2nd century AD. Threatened with death by the Romans, Simeon had hidden for 12 years in a cave. 10 centuries later, his writings had been found there, and these were the sources of the books of the Zohar. Simeon's teachings were supposed to have been drawn from the Chokmah Nistara, or Hidden Wisdom of Moses, i.e., a body of esoteric law first studied by Moses in Egypt, the land of his birth, then pondered by him during his 40 years in the wilderness, where he received special instruction from an angel, and finally incorporated cryptically in the first 4 books of the Pentateuch, from which it can be extracted by a proper understanding and manipulation of the mystical number values of the Hebrew alphabet. This law, and the techniques for rediscovering and utilizing it, constitute the Kabbalah. It is said that the teachings of the Kabbalah, received or traditional lore, were first entrusted by God himself to a special group of angels in paradise. After man had been expelled from the garden, some of these angels communicated the lessons to Adam, thinking to help him back to felicity thereby. From Adam the teaching passed to Noah, and from Noah to Abraham. Abraham let some of it slip from him while he was in Egypt, and that is why this sublime wisdom can now be found in reduced form in the myths and philosophies of the Gentiles. Moses first studied it with the priests of Egypt, but the tradition was refreshed in him by the special instructions of his angels.
Macroprosopos is the uncreated uncreating, and microprosopos the uncreated creating, respectively. The silence and the syllable Aum, the unmanifest and the presence imminent in the cosmogonic round.